The eighth commandment, of course, is, thou shalt not steal. Lord's Day 42 asks, what doth God forbid in the eighth commandment? God forbids not only those thefts and robberies which are punishable by the magistrate, but he comprehends under the name of theft all wicked tricks and devices whereby we design to appropriate to ourselves the goods which belong to our neighbour, whether it be by force or under the appearance of right, as by unjust weights, ells, measures, fraudulent merchandise, false coins, usury, or by any other way forbidden by God, as also all covetousness, all abuse and waste of his gifts. But what doth God require in this commandment? That I promote the advantage of my neighbour in every instance I can or may, and deal with him as I desire to be dealt with by others. Further also, that I faithfully labour, so that I may be able to relieve the needy. Remember a few weeks ago, beloved, when we looked at the fifth commandment, we saw that all authority is God's, that he gives authority in various spheres to certain people, and that he invests people with authority in various ways. That a politician, for example, gains his political or civil authority by the vote in an election. Or a couple receive authority as parents by having a child. Well, it's similar with the eighth commandment. Only this time we're not speaking of authority, but of property. All property is God's, because he created all things, and he governs and upholds all things. And then, God gives property to people in various amounts. This one owns many acres, and attractive and large buildings, and has a great deal of money in the bank. And that one only owns the clothes on his back and the few coins which jingle in his pocket. God also providentially distributes property amongst people in various ways. You're familiar with these, but perhaps not this way of approaching it. Property, possessions, change hands through buying and selling, through work, through death and inheritance. At death, the one who dies loses all the earthly things that he or she possesses. Then comes in inheritance, and another receives what was bequeathed him or her in the deceased person's will. So you see the analogy here, beloved, between the principles of the fifth commandment, but honoring those in authority, and the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal, because in both, God is sovereign over all things. All authority is God's, fifth commandment, and all property is God's, eighth commandment. God sovereignly distributes in various degrees and spheres authority through elections and promotion and marriage, fifth commandment, and God sovereignly distributes in various degrees and spheres property through business, dealings, and inheritance, and so forth. And just as the fifth commandment concerns the proper use of and response to authority, whether parents, church leaders, civil rulers, whatever, so the eighth commandment concerns the proper use of property, possessions, the things which we and other people own. So we need to get straight then, this, right at the start of this exposition of the eighth commandment, if we're going to keep this divine precept. God owns everything. The whole universe, and each individual thing in it. God determines who gets what. Your neighbor's car, or spouse, or your car, or spouse. The wealth of one, and the penury of another. And then God's word governs how the ownership of property is to be viewed and to be transferred. And all of this is presupposed in the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal. God owns all property, and then there is the right of private property. That something doesn't belong to me, it belongs to you, and I can't take it. And if I do, that's stealing, because God has given you rights over that thing. Private property. That's how the Christian must think and act regarding his own and others' possessions. God owns it. You say, well, that's Harry's house, or that's someone else's bicycle, but fundamentally, God owns it. That's the hardest thing. That's the struggle for our faith, to keep thinking that. Because the earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, the sea, and everything that dwells therein, as we're taught at the beginning of Psalm 24. Which means that everyone is to be a steward in God's name and on his behalf of all their possessions. And the Christian also understands that not only does God own everything, but he owns me. Because not only has God created me, not only does he give me life each moment of the day, not only does he govern me, and not only does he judge me, and will he judge me, but he has also redeemed me by the blood of Jesus Christ. And here we're back to the very first Lord's Day once again. I do not belong to myself, but to my faithful Savior Jesus Christ, because he has bought me body and soul. He owns me. That's crucial. And so God says to all of us tonight, together and individually, I have redeemed you from the bondage of sin, to paraphrase the preface to the Ten Commandments, so that I own you. You too, as much as everything else, and more so than everything else, because I have redemptive rights over you. Now you must be grateful. And being grateful means, in this instance, you don't steal. And you don't steal in any shape or form. And stealing has an awful lot of shapes and forms, but you don't do any of them because you're thankful that you've been redeemed from sin and destruction. That's the point. That's the eighth commandment. And we're going to consider, first of all, what it forbids. That's question and answer 110. And then what it requires. Question and answer 111. The eighth commandment, what it forbids and what it requires. The first thing that our Heidelberg Catechism does in its treatment of what the eighth commandment forbids is to make the distinction between crimes and sins. Answer 110 starts, God forbids not only those thefts and robberies which are punishable by the magistrate, but he also comprehends under the idea of stealing all sorts of other things. Crimes against the eighth commandment are punishable by the civil magistrate, and then there are other sins against the eighth commandment which are not crimes punishable by the state. So all crimes are sins, assuming now that it's a proper law and it doesn't transgress God's laws. All crimes are sins. But not all sins are crimes. If all sins were crimes, everybody in this room ought to be in jail or executed. Not all sins are crimes. Simple distinction, but important. Two specific crimes condemned by the Eighth Commandment are mentioned in Answer 110. Thefts and robberies. What's the difference? Well, a robbery is a theft plus, going along with it, the threat or use of violence. So we talk about a thief, meaning a pickpocket or a shoplifter or a cat burglar, but a robber is someone who comes armed with a knife or a gun, like the man who robs a bank. It's a hold-up. Hand over the money or I shoot you. That's how it goes. So robbery typically has a stiffer sentence than mere theft. Mere compared to robbery. Now, why do you think Lord's Day 42 on the 8th commandment begins with this distinction between crimes and sins? It's to disabuse people of the false and shallow view that the 8th commandment merely forbids the crimes of theft and robbery. Otherwise, people might reckon, well, there's one I've kept. I have never been arrested for stealing, never mind imprisoned. Tick to that one, and I've only the other 9 to keep, and I'll be all right. And of course, this false view of thou shalt not steal, that arises naturally in fallen man's darkened heart, serves man's rags of self-righteousness. Prone to think, oh, I've kept that one. Whereas, the law of God is designed to be our schoolmaster to lead us to Jesus Christ. And if someone thinks he's kept the 8th commandment, then there's no need for the righteousness of God in the life and cross of Christ. So, Lord's Day 42 says it's not just these things. It's all these other things. And then it delves into them a whole lot more and is a lot more thorough about them. And so, I trust that we don't have to say a big pile more about crimes against the 8th commandment, that you're not engaging in these sort of things, that we're not going to open one of the local newspapers and read of you as convicted of shoplifting or tax evasion or any such thing, to echo Ephesians 5 from our last sermon. Such things should not even be so much as named amongst us. But not only now, these gross and civil offences, the 8th commandment forbids many other things. And I trust it's there especially that we must watch and guard ourselves. And so the next section of answer 110 forbids all sorts of sinful ways, whereby we design to appropriate to ourselves the goods which belong to our neighbour. There are various ways you can do this. You can use force. Now we're getting somewhat near robberies. But you can use force to acquire the goods of your neighbor without actually committing a criminal offense. The school bully on the playground uses force or the threat of force to get, I don't know, your chocolate bar or your new penknife or whatever it is. But it's not a crime. It's a sin. Children in the home can use force, and they do that too, with the toys, for instance. Soldiers use force, or at least that was a very real threat to those soldiers that came to John the Baptist in Luke 3, verse 14. And John said to them, "You do not intimidate people with your force of arms, to shake down money out of them." And here we see the 8th commandment and the 6th commandment. 6th commandment, thou shalt not kill, means thou shalt not use unlawful force. And so you break the 6th commandment with a threat of violence to get the goods of another, which is the 8th commandment. The next clause is this. Under the appearance of right. You can use the appearance of right to appropriate the goods of your neighbor. You can change boundary markers. You can bribe police officers or judges. I trust you can't actually, and that they'll not be corrupt, but that's a way in which it is frequently done. So they then vindicate you. The law then is twisted, so that you then gain through your corrupting of them. And then there's unjust weights, ells, or measures. And the prophets especially railed against this sin. And this is a particularly dodgy sort of area in days and societies where standard measurements are harder to obtain. With an electronic balance, unless someone does quite a complicated piece of electronic fancy footwork, it's much more difficult. But if you're in the middle of Africa, let's say, and you're weighing your bananas or some other form of fruit on scales with little lumps of metal or rock, a little bit more room for scope there. And you see how it goes on. You have one measurement when you are selling, and you have a different measurement when you are buying. So at each time you cream off a little bit for yourself. You could think of this too. Let's say if you were a shop owner in the olden days when you were selling sweets by the quarter, and instead of putting a little quarter pound weight on the scales to put the sweeties on the other side, you had a slightly smaller one, and then you could make your big container for the sweets go a little bit further. Well, that's just a simple illustration to show how this sort of thing goes on. Fraudulent merchandise. Selling something and it does not do exactly what it says on the tin. You water down the petrol that you sell to make it go further, that is to make yourself more money. You engage in deceitful and misleading advertising. And here the 8th commandment touches upon the 9th commandment. Thou shalt not bear false witness. So you break the 9th commandment by telling lies in order to break the 8th commandment, to steal. Steal by taking what is not lawfully yours. False coins is mentioned next. We would say counterfeit money. Now today, in order to make counterfeit money, you would need sophisticated machinery, somewhere to store it. So I dare say that's beyond the means of us here. But you can also be involved in this racket by circulating it, or, which is perhaps more possible for us, passing it on to others. When someone slips you one, and then you're caught with a 10 or a 20, and it breaks your heart to have to tear the thing up, or try and report it, if you think that the person who passed it on to you isn't part of the racket, but that he did it by mistake too. So then you try and filch it into the bank whenever you're next making a lodgment, let's say. And then there's usury. Usury means, in the first instance, interest charged upon a loan. However, here in the Heidelberg Catechism, when it says usury, it's not forbidding charging interest on loans of a decent, moderate, lawful sort of amount. Because this is a Reformed confession, the Heidelberg Catechism, and the Reformation, as opposed to medieval Romanism, this was a big shift in society with major implications also for the trade of Northern Europe, which was more Reformed, over Southern Europe. The Roman Church said no usury in any shape or form. And so this was the loophole for the Jews. A Christian then couldn't lend to another Christian. So the Jews came in as the money lenders of Europe, and therefore this is part of the way in which they became hated, like the Merchant of Venice, because they were cleverer, better educated, better businessmen than most of the Christians, and then they got wealthy and they charged usury and so forth. Well, medieval Romanism opposed usury, and the reformers said that having charging interest of a decent amount was lawful, useful, helped the economy. And this is part of the reason why Northern Europe became more wealthy, because it furthered further business. And then, as if all that isn't enough, and as if the Catechism wants to make sure that everything is caught and nothing slips through, it adds that we must not unlawfully appropriate the goods of our neighbor in any way, any other way, that's forbidden by God. You can think here, for instance, of cheating on your tax forms. And now we're back to the fifth commandment. Thou shalt not steal, eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal from the civil government by cheating your tax form. Because Romans 13 says part of the honor which we give to those whom God has put over us in the civil sphere is we give custom to whom custom is due, tribute to whom tribute, that is, we pay our taxes. With a little bit more thought, we can conceive of various and many ways in which we can unlawfully seek to obtain the goods of our neighbor. Blackmail is one. Blackmail. If you don't give me money, I will tell on you. You will go to jail. That's a very fruitful one. You can milk that one for many years. The church treasurer, diddling the offerings. All sorts of ways. Going on strike. Oh, there's another one. And here we have another instance of sin against the fifth commandment, honoring your employer, by which you sin against the eighth commandment. That is, you go on strike in order to obtain more money, better pay, or improved working conditions, or both, in an unlawful way, because the employee has no right to lay down his tools and go on strike, which is a form of blackmail, no more than a wife can go on strike against her husband or a husband against his wife and say, well, since you're not treating me properly, I'm not going to make you any meals, we're not going to sleep together. Or a parent with a child, and the child says, I think you're a very bad mother, very bad father, and I'm not going to do what I'm told. And until you apologize to me, I'm going on strike. You can't do that sort of thing. That's not on. Protection money. That's a lovely phrase. The gang goes to some local business and shops and says, give me some money, and if you don't, I will come back and smash your windows. And if you don't do it again, I'll smash your kneecaps. And they call that protection money. Or, you pay us and then we will protect you from the other gangs who might come in and smash your windows or break your kneecaps. Lovely. Lovely. An unlawful, wicked way of appropriating, typically, money from somebody else. One of my favorite proverbs, because I find it so amusing and true to life, is that one which deals with the deceitful buyer. He goes to the person and says, oh, it's nothing, that's rubbish, no good, no good. Sure, nobody would want that, all I can give you is a pittance for it. And then when he's got it, he goes away and tells his friend, what a great deal I did, I just conned him out of this, and the poor fool, he took, yeah. That's breaking not just the ninth commandment, but the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal. Adultery. Adultery is stealing. Adultery is stealing because you are stealing another person's wife or husband. The eighth commandment now comes into play with the seventh commandment. Similarly, you could say pornography. You have no right to look lasciviously at that person. That person may say, I am willing for filthy lucre to expose myself to get wealthy, but that person doesn't control their body. They cannot do that because their body belongs to God by creation and providence. But let's stick with adultery. You steal another person's wife or husband by lying with them because that person does not belong to you. the wife belongs to the husband, and the husband to the wife, and their bodies and souls are off limit for you. And it's the same thing with divorce and remarriage. Someone who remarries belongs to their original, that is, true spouse. That was the vow they took to, till death us do part. And you get a legal declaration from the state that you are divorced. Legally, the state allows you to remarry. But someone who is divorced and remarried while their spouse is living belongs to their first spouse. And anybody married to them claims a person that does not belong to them and is not only living in continuous adultery, but in continuous theft. Because they have stolen the body that lies next to them on the bed. There's all sorts of ways to break this commandment. That's why we have the catch-all, by any other way forbidden by God. See, sometimes we not only think that the eighth commandment is an easy one, but we also reckon that the Bible has little to say about the eighth commandment. So let's turn to Leviticus 19 now. Rules on holy living as God's people in the world. Let's start with verses 9 and 10. This was an Old Testament law for Israel that when you harvested the grain, you didn't go into the corners. You left a little bit for the poor and needy. And when you picked your grapes or olives, you left a few. The idea was that the poor who didn't own land, who needed to keep body and soul together, could then come and take the bits that you missed and left. Of course, this commends itself to us. Not that that's a law which our society has to keep, but because it shows kindness, it provides for the poor, and it provides for the poor in such a way that they work rather than just getting it handed to them. So then they are active in obtaining. So it's a very good law. Verse 11 says, "Ye shall not steal, neither deal falsely, neither lie one to another." And here again we have stealing, but the mention of lying, the ninth commandment, in this context especially implies what we saw earlier, that you tell lies oftentimes to steal. That's another way, not just taking what the Old Testament law gave to the poor by reaping into the corners, but this way too. Verse 13 deals with stealing and defrauding your neighbor, especially in connection with paying him, and being slow to pay him. Don't defraud your neighbor, don't rob him. And when a man is hired by you, you don't keep it, that is, the pay, all night until the morning. This assumes a society in which the person needs their pay day by day to keep things ticking over. So, in our society, few people, I dare say, are just as tight as that with them. But you pay them every week or every month regularly, and you don't have them coming hounding you and asking you to pay them and begging you, which, as well as sickening the person, is a breaking of the eighth commandment. He has paid you, he has done the work, you agreed to pay him, now pay him and have done with it. Verse 15, "Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, on the one hand, nor honour the person of the mighty, but in righteousness shalt thou judge thy neighbour." And you say, what is this to do with stealing? Well, this, you owe the man justice. That's a debt. You owe him justice. And so if you're, to use our terms, a bleeding heart liberal way on the left, so that the poor and the downtrodden are always right, you go with him no matter what justice says. Or if you're an ultra right wing conservative, you go with the rich and mighty no matter what justice says. And the scripture says, you extremes weigh on the left and the right, a plague on both your houses. You don't go with the rich because they're rich. You don't go with the poor because they're poor. You go with justice. You go with what the law says. That's the standard. And if you don't do that, then you steal. You steal that person's right of justice. Verse 16, thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people. Stealing, because you steal the person's good name, which is very important and precious. Many of us would far rather lose a lot of money than lose our good name. Good name is more important than money. You steal, you take it away. Verse 17, thou shalt not hate thy neighbor, thy brother rather, in thine heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. Thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. And now you're thinking, what's that got to do with stealing? This passage forbids hating a brother. This passage forbids failing to rebuke him, so its sin hangs on him and then he suffers spiritually for it. This passage tells us that we mustn't take vengeance against a brother or bear a grudge on him. What's that got to do with stealing? This. The one thing you owe somebody, Romans 13 says, owe no man anything but to love one another. And so when you don't love him, and you show you don't love him by hating him and not rebuking him for his sin and bearing a grudge against him and avenging him, then you steal from him what is his due of love. You owe him that. You owe him that just as much as you owe a debt of money. But you don't give it. You steal it. Verse 29. Do not prostitute thy daughter to cause her to be a whore, lest the land fall to whoredom, etc. And there, the person is so covetous, so greedy, that he wants to make money, that he puts his daughter into the life of a prostitute, so that he can make money out of her. His own daughter. That's stealing. In the covetous desire, and in the use of her to make you money. So that she sins, and you make money of your own daughter. And evidently that was done. And there are mothers and fathers who have suggested that as a good career move. Good career move. To make money. Verse 30. Ye shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. So here we're dealing with a debt to God of keeping the fourth commandment. And the fourth commandment here is closely related with my sanctuary. Keeping God's Sabbaths is done especially, and this is the way our Heidelberg Catechism of the fourth commandment puts it, is done especially by attending diligently the public worship of the church. And so God is owed worship on the Lord's Day. God is owed attendance at the public worship and both services. And so when someone does not come, not now if they're sick or out of the country or something, but does not come, they're stealing from God. God says, I own that day, especially, and you must be there at the worship service, and you are a thief, because you said, that's my time, I'll do it whatever I want. But it's not your time. It's not your time at all. You're not thinking straight. God's time. He hallowed that day by causing his son to rise from the dead on the first day of the week. Verse 32. Thou shalt rise up before the hoary head. That is, a man or woman with white or grey hair, because they're old. Honour the face of the old man and fear thy God. I am the Lord. There's a debt which is owed, that is respect and honour to the aged. And you steal from them if you do not give them the honour due to them as aged. 33 and 34 talks about abusing and vexing the stranger. You owe him respect and care to look out for him, but you don't. You rob him of it. And in fact, if that becomes totally grievous, you may even take advantage of the fellow and make money out of him. And 35 and 36 mention what we have also in the answer of question 110. You do no unrighteousness in meat yard, weight, measure. Use just balances, just weights, just ephah, and a just hin. because there are measurements of weight, say you're weighing bananas, measurements of length, you're buying carpet, measurements that are liquid measures like milk, and then you have other sorts of dry measures too. And given the depravity of man and the lust to obtain more, the Bible's very specific. You've got to use the right measures. And then somebody say, well, maybe I can get away with a liquid measure of 1.9 liters. So it says, no, 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 you've got to use the proper hin. Well, maybe. And so it keeps being specific to close the loopholes. And the issue here with all of these examples in the Catechism and from Leviticus 19 is most basically God owns everything. In his wisdom and sovereignty, he has given such and such to your neighbor, such and such to that neighbor, and so much to you. Now be content what you have, because God gave it to you in his sovereignty and wisdom. And do not steal from your neighbor, or, which is the same thing, do not seek to acquire from him what he has unlawfully. Because you're stealing from God. Because you're impugning his wisdom. You're opposing his sovereignty. And of course you're showing that you are discontent with what you have. And that you are unthankful for what you have. It's not enough. God's holding out on me. He doesn't care for me. The only way I can get ahead and get what I really want, which he should have given me in the first place, is by stealing. That is using trickery and deceit. And then the next part of answer 110 states that the 8th commandment also forbids all covetousness. And you say the 8th commandment forbids all covetousness? But that's the 10th commandment. The point here is that the 8th commandment and the 10th commandment are connected. Sounds familiar. This commandment's connected to that one. Yeah, they all are, aren't they? And they're connected in this way, that covetousness, the 10th commandment, is the root or source of stealing or appropriating goods in an unlawful way, the 8th commandment. And you see that. It's not very difficult. When we're tempted to be economical with the truth in order to obtain something, it's because we want it. We want it very desperately. We want it badly. 10th commandment. We want it badly enough to tell lies or to be economical with the truth. 9th commandment. In order to obtain that thing sinfully, 8th commandment. What does James say? He who breaks one commandment is guilty of all. Well, here's another way in which we can see something of this. These commandments are interrelated. And then our Reformed faith, summed here in this Lord's Day of the Heidelberg Catechism, gives us another way of breaking the 8th commandment, a way which might well have escaped our attention otherwise. The last clause, God forbids all abuse and waste of his gifts. All abuse and waste of his gifts. And here again we come back to the absolute sovereignty of God. He has given you all the gifts that you have, and in the measure that you have them. Time, money, resources, skills. And he says, use them. To use the language of one of the parables we looked at recently, occupy till I come. Do business with what I've given you. Use them in my service. Use them for my glory. Use them at home and in your family. Use them at work. Use them in the church. Use them with the saints and your neighbors. And so we break the 8th commandment when we don't use our gifts. This is what the Catechism here calls wasting our gifts. And when we use our gifts, in the service of sin and our own lusts, that is, as if we actually owned our gifts, that they were totally within our remit, and we decided, well, I've got these abilities, I've got this money, it's my time, and I just do whatever I want with it, then that's abusing your gifts. That is, you're using it not for the purpose for which you received it. Thou shalt not steal. That is, use the good gifts that I have given you for the furtherance of my kingdom and the honor of my name. Use them as my steward, whom I have redeemed, both body and soul. And you confess this too at your baptism, that you've been redeemed and washed with my blood, and you dedicate yourself to me. You don't own yourself. That's what you say every year at the start of the Heidelberg Catechism season, preaching. And then you go and live as a thief. You steal from me yourself. That's the point. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to offend the Lord. We don't want to do that too, because that makes worship impossible. How does it make worship impossible? Well, what is worship? Worship is offering yourself up to God as a living sacrifice. You say in worship, Lord, thou art worthy, I'm thy servant, and my heart and life belongs to thee. But then if you don't use your gifts and abilities and talents in the service of Jesus Christ, then you're stealing, and then you're contradicting your worship. So we offer ourselves to God in worship, such as we are. We serve Him, therefore, in gratitude. And principally, when we do this, principally, we are keeping the eighth commandment. We're not stealing. We're giving to the Lord His due, our worship, our hearts, our service. And then when we approach the eighth commandment, and our lives here below as God's people, we're not prone to do all these things, wicked tricks, false measurements, fraudulent merchandise, etc. That sort of stuff isn't in our thinking. We don't want that. And whenever the temptation comes, we say that's contrary to the basic bent and direction of my life. And so we shun it by God's grace. Positively, though, this eighth commandment requires two main things, according to question and answer 11. Quote, that I promote the advantage of my neighbour in every instance I can or may, every instance, and deal with him as I desire to be dealt with by others. The eighth commandment, therefore, requires us to desire good for my neighbor. And not my neighbor whom I never see, but my neighbor especially whom I can see and who rubs shoulders with me. He's the hard one, that guy. That I must do good to my neighbor, and more especially the eighth commandment requires that we do good for our neighbor in his property or possessions with what he materially owns. With respect to my next door neighbor, this means then that I'm not trying to steal his land or move the fence so that I get a little bit of the tract in his garden. That I'm not on the lookout for swiping his football if he leaves it unattended. You don't do that. And in fact, that I'm going to look out for him and try and help him. I'm going to try and be considerate, for instance, in parking, so that when I have people over, I try not to park in front of his house and get the guy all mad. I'm going to be considerate too with regard to such things as noise levels. And if you say, well, phew, this is a really, really big thing here, this promoting the advantage of my neighbor in every instance I can or may, boy, that surely includes an awful lot of things. What is it then to do it to the advantage of my neighbor? You just mentioned two or three things, and I can see this is going to include all sorts of stuff. This could get very, very complicated. Well, then you say, well, what does it mean? I must deal with him as I desire to be dealt with by others. Ah, so I've got to think of it that way. That'll help in my mind think what I ought to do. As Jesus said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So then we think, well, how would I like it if he or she did that on me? And that's a pretty good guideline to know how we ought to treat our neighbors and to seek their good and their welfare in their possessions and money too. So we love our neighbor, and we love our neighbor in his possessions. And I talked about the guy next door. What about the guy with whom we trade and buy and sell? My guess is that that might even be harder. The neighbor with whom you have financial dealings, so that you're not out to con him or get as much as possible from him for as little as possible, that you're interested in fairness, and not just fairness for yourself, but fairness for him too. And immediately we sense and we feel this is incredibly difficult, because this is very opposite to our natural inclinations. We might even think this is totally mad. How in the wide world are you ever going to live today with that sort of attitude? If I did that, I'd be broke. Could never cope. This, of course, only teaches us not only our own depravity and blindness, but that, as Galatians 1 verse 4 puts it, this present world is evil. The world is so made up since the fall that every good gift that God has given is pressed into the service of sin, so that the whole world system militates against Christian ethics, because it's ingrained in us and the old man and everybody else and the systems of this world, the buying, the selling, the markets, the business world, that this is the only way in which you can get ahead. This is the only way you can keep your head above water. You've got to be on the lookout. Everybody else is going to fleece you, so you have to be one step ahead of the crowd, or else you're going to be ripped off left, right, and center. This takes a lot of grace for us. We've all felt this as we heard this word, that we don't live this way. We're the neighbor next door. Sometimes you try and think as little as possible about the guy, because it just does your head in, the way he gets on, the way he behaves. And you think for peace and quiet, as few, as little dealings with the guy as possible. It takes grace. Grace. We're taught about that especially in the cross, about what God gave. When he was under no debt to us at all, in the light too of what we deserved, that God spared not his own son, but freely gave him up for us all. Then when we think about that, and we don't think enough about it, our tight little grabbing hands begin just to relax a little. I don't say a lot, because we only have a small beginning of the new obedience. We relax our hands just a little. And then maybe with all that effort that we make to try and keep our whole hands closed, to hold on to what we've got and then grab a bit besides, maybe our hands even begin to open just a little. And maybe even we find it in ourselves, by God's grace, as we ought to do, to give. To do unto others as we would have them do to us. To seek their advantage and not just our own. Even with my neighbor, the guy next door. Even with the guy with whom I have to deal and trade and buy and sell. And then if we can find ourselves doing that, we know we're making some, a little progress in the life we must live as the children of the living God. I said two things. The second one is, further also, that I faithfully labor so that I may be able to relieve the needy. Here again we say, but I thought that was the fourth commandment, faithful labor. So it's required not only by the fourth commandment, working, and then a day of rest, or rather in the New Testament, day of rest, and then out of that working, but also here in the eighth commandment. And again we see they're interrelated. They're interrelated. We must faithfully labor. And labor so as to be able to relieve the needy means gainful employment, which of course assumes that you have health to do work yourself, that your family responsibilities make that possible for you, and that you are able to get a job. But assuming those things are true, then you work. You work faithfully all your hours, and don't just sign in for another 15 minutes when you weren't there. You work honestly, and you work hard. And then this commandment says that we do not work simply to obtain money for yourself and your family, but you also work consciously too, in order to have money to give to others. And that you fulfill this responsibility by working, gaining some money, and by giving it, one, to the church, which administers financial assistance in the form of benevolence, and two, personally, which also includes the giving of hospitality. And you do both. You don't just say, well, I give to the church, and that means I don't have to give to anybody at all. I've done that. Finished. And you don't just give personally and say, well, stop the church. You do both as and when you have possibility, have opportunity. And you say, why must we do this? Well, we must do this because the eighth commandment says, thou shalt not steal. And if God has given you finances and ability to help the poor, then it is stealing if you do not. And this is confessional with us, that we must have this desire and to be able to relieve the needy. So I say again, you might have thought, the eighth commandment, that's an easy one. Seventh commandment, committing adultery, that's a tough one. Coveting, the tenth's a hard one. The fourth commandment, the first commandment, oh, hard ones. But the eighth commandment, a nice soft one, a Sunday evening where we're not going to be hit too hard. But it's not. You know, you could say they're every last one of them very hard, even for us Christians. We're called here to put on contentment, Christian love, faithfulness and generosity, to put off greed and envy and money grabbing and shifty dealing, and to care for our neighbour and love him in his earthly goods and welfare. And that's what we've got to do by God's grace, because we're thankful. We've been redeemed, we've been bought, and we owe it. Amen.